Gay Wizard Book Club.
Well, hello. Hello and welcome back to another thrilling episode of the Gay Wizard Book Club. I'm Paul W. Turing.
I'm Ray McLean.
And for this episode, we have some lovely ASMR background noise because Ray is recording in a tiny little bean-shaped trailer with metal roof, and tis raining.
Yeah, it's, you know, I usually record upstairs because my roommates and I manage an Airbnb out of the upstairs, but there are people in it.
Stupid beers.
Stupid people. So I'm out here. I feel a little bit like I'm in like a divorce rom-com because I'm in a camper and it's raining. And like, we're recording this after work. We usually record in the afternoon. But like, I got out of work and was like, I want a couple of drinks, but I have no control around alcohol. So I bought mini bottles at the liquor store.
Is that your way of like just forcefully portion controlling yourself?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I'm not only am I in a camper in the rain, I'm in a camper in the rain with like mini bottles of vodka and one canned Moscow Mule with me.
I gotta try one of those canned Moscow Mules. That sounds great.
They're actually really good.
I've heard they're good. I've definitely used that Porth shouldn't control magic for weed as well. I bought one time like one of those pill organizers for like
I love that.
Just like a little tiny nug in each box.
That's amazing. Your dosages.
It did not work.
Yeah. you were on Sunday by like Wednesday night.
Let's not talk about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
In other news, we have some actual housekeeping for the podcast to talk about today. Ray did some actual math, and it turns out that if we keep only doing two chapters per episode, this book is going to take us 6 months.
It's going to take us, like, a lot. It's going to take us, like, four sandwiches of the month, okay? That's so long.
And so as much as we, you know, want to cover everything and talk about everything, we also, it's a book club, we want to get some other books, and we want to keep it moving and keep it keep it fresh, you know, fresh and organic for you.
Fresh and organic, like the sandwiches of the month that I serve.
Starting next episode, we're going to move to three chapters, or roughly 40 pages of reading for our week, and we'll see how that goes for us. We're just continuing to figure out this whole podcast structure thing. Thank you for taking this journey of discovery with us.
Yes, thank you. We're just a baby.
So today we will be talking about chapters 7 and 8 as planned, but next episode we'll be moving up to three chapters.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to start us off with a summary of chapter 7?
Chapter 7. Over yet another wild breakfast buffet, Haymitch asks Katniss and Peeta about their skills. Katniss is the Annie Oakley of archery. Peeta is strong and good at wrestling, which doesn't turn Katniss on at all. Oh. We also learn that Peeta's shitty mom told him that she thinks Katniss is a contender to win the games. Katniss and Peeta agree to stick together as a team, per Haymitch's instructions. After 3 days of training with the other tributes, Katniss has her solo eval with the game makers. Enraged by the way they take her excellent shooting for granted, she shoots the apple out of their suckling pig's mouth in one of the series' most iconic moments.
Truly. I'm so glad that we have, like, an unspoken rule to not read each other's summaries before they get read on the podcast.
It's true. The first maybe, like, one or two I skimmed yours, and then I was like, no, it's better if I don't know.
I also like that you use the word suckling pig, because I wasn't sure if that was actually what it was called.
Yeah.
Because I'd heard that phrase before, but...
Yeah.
Gotta have that apple in the mouth, or else it's not a roast suckling pig.
It's true. So, like, we haven't even started the chapter yet, but are you ready for a tangent?
Yes. Oh, literally always. That's my favorite.
So, there's a restaurant in Minneapolis that it's probably still open. I don't know. It's pandemic.
Yeah, who knows?
But there's a restaurant in Minneapolis called Chino Latino.
I think it's still open.
But if you give them 72 hours notice and a bunch of money, they will cook a suckling pig for you.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that.
Yeah. And because my brother knows himself and is just great, he not only did that for his high school graduation, but also for his college graduation. He was like, I want the pig again.
That's pretty great.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the move especially if you graduate from Southwest High School in Minneapolis.
Yes. Yes.
Grad party. Same. At Chino. I mean, mm-hmm. I gotta imagine they're still open. I did not know they did pigs, and I used to work for that company.
Yeah. You can get at least in like the mid to, you know, at least in like about the time that the Hunger Games books were coming out, you could get a whole suckling pig there.
That's amazing. Anywho, so this book. This shower sounds terrifying.
Yeah, where Katniss is just hitting a bunch of buttons and she has to like scrape foam off with a bristle brush.
I don't want the possibility of I don't want those buttons to be there. Like, why are there buttons that make it so that you're being alternatively sprayed with cold and hot water? That's...
Yeah.
That's, why is that an option?
I don't know. I found it hilarious that Katniss, when she got out of the shower, used lotion. Because, like, Katniss doesn't seem like a lotion person, but I feel like her mom, her, like, middle-class mom, who is really, like, femme and proper, like, beat that into her.
I did not notice the lotion part, but you're absolutely right. Like, there's no way in hell Katniss would ever have learned that, except for maybe her mom being like, moisturizing is so important. Like, you just can't get that.
Yeah, because you know that Gale's legs look like a tree. No, they do.
Speaking of tangents,
yes.
One time when I was in, it must have been like middle school. It was when I was still doing soccer, but it was like soccer practice was at the middle school. Anyways, after practice, my parents were like chatting in the parking lot when their minivans came to pick up my friend and I, rather than driving us home. So we were just left to our own devices to run into this field. Uh-huh. And we ended up exploring the woods adjacent to the field and threw like a bunch of poison ivy. But I was wearing my shin guards because it was after practice. And so somehow the like oil from the poison ivy like mixed with my wet sweat that was underneath the shin guards. And so I had poison ivy like in the shape of my shin guards, like my entire shins. And so like it wasn't like a problem, it just like took forever for me to get over, and I used a lot of like anti-itch whatever stuff on my shins for like,
yeah, I bet
like
you did.
At least a week, to the point where my skin was so dried out that it looked like alligator skin scales. Like it did. It looked like bark.
Wow.
That's probably what Gale's legs look like. It's just where that tangent came from and where it ended.
Yeah, that's yep.
So yeah, so then she takes her scary shower and then she goes to breakfast and eats orange pancakes, which frankly sound delicious. Like, that's not a combination I would have thought of, but yes, put some orange on those pancakes.
Totally.
And then, maybe this is before that, but she's wondering about, she's thinking about, like, back home, her mom and Prim and what they'd be doing that day. And the line, and how empty the house feels even from a distance. Such a hard line. Like, you know exactly how that feeling feels. You know what I mean? Like, being far from home and thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And it's a great line.
Yeah. I also like that she gets dressed. She, like, finally has choice in how she gets dressed. Or actually, no, she doesn't. It's chosen for her. But she just has, like, black pants and a maroon shirt, and she gets to do her hair the way she usually does. And she talks about how feeling that she looks like herself calms her.
Mm,
and
yeah.
That's a great line and also a very queer line.
Yeah. So then they're talking about, Haymitch is asking them about their skills, what they can do.
Yeah.
And nobody has a crush on anybody, and it's totally normal.
And nobody has noticed minute things about each other's lives for years and years. It's fantastic.
Yeah. I deeply respect Katniss's response to being complimented is to get annoyed. Really relate to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So being like, well, I don't know how to handle this feeling, so I'm going to be mad at you about it.
Mm-hmm.
Love that.
Yes.
And it annoys her right into talking about his strong arms.
His strong arms and his wrestling skills.
Oh my god, that's so true. Like, Katniss, you've been watching this boy at wrestling?
Yeah.
That's the most sexual thing you could watch anyone do.
There is no having a harder high school boner for somebody than watching their wrestling meet.
Like, thank God. I remember I was just so deeply uninvolved in everything going on in my high school when I went there that I, like, didn't even know we had a wrestling team until, like, I was almost already graduating. And honestly, thank God. Because, like, I didn't need to know that. I didn't need to know who was on the wrestling team. I didn't need to know when and at what time those practices were. Like, no. I'm very comfortable having graduated from high school, not having a single crush on any of those weirdos.
Yeah.
Save that shit for college.
Save it for college. Just save it for college. So, oh man, this is gonna be a tangent-y episode, but I promise this one is worth your time. So, in, like, junior year of high school, I had a boyfriend who is really into Korean martial arts.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
He Continue.
Was great. Yes. But he had, like, a Korean martial arts event that he was the halftime of a roller derby show. Yes.
Wait. Before you go further.
Yes.
This boy was to perform Korean martial arts as a halftime performance at a roller derby show.
Yes. Also, for, like, illustrative flavor, I was in a throuple with him, but we did not have the vocabulary for that at the time.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's just incredibly Minneapolis of you, everything that you just said.
I know. I know. And I didn't have a driver's license, but I wanted to go to this, and my mom instantly was like, I'll drive you.
Oh my god, I just can't imagine your mom. Your mom of all people.
I know. My mom is just so, she was so fucking ready, and she was having such a great time. And as a teenager, I was like, why did you volunteer for this? Like, why do you care? And now, looking back on it, I'm like, yeah. Just 11 out of 10 if I was the responsible adult and a teenager came to me and was like, my boyfriend is in the halftime of a roller derby show to kick some boards in half, and I can't, like, I absolutely would be like, I will drive you and be dying with laughter on the inside at every second of this.
There's,
like,
literally,
I will take you.
There's literally no downside for her. Like,
no.
She gets to see roller derby. Mm-hmm. She gets to, like, silently laugh at the entire teenage situation of it.
Mm-hmm.
A hot boy doing martial arts. Like, there's no downside.
He was really hot.
That's great.
So, anyways, training. PETA's like, Katniss is amazing at archery, and she's like, I'm all right, and he's like, she shoots squirrels through the eye every time.
Which is insane.
She is, like, Olympics level, whatever that means.
No, and it's so funny how later on she's like, I'm not as good as my dad was. I'm like, I don't know if that's true anymore. Like, mm-hmm. like that's insanely totally. Good. Mm-hmm. I think hitting a squirrel on anywhere would be incredibly impressive and difficult. They're so small and fast, and they don't move in a normal, predictable way. Like, it's like, I'm gonna shoot that piece of ribbon that got caught in the wind.
Yeah. And then Katniss is like, you're good at wrestling, and I definitely don't care at all. And then PETA just...
Well, before the heart-wrenching I do also love that PETA's like, so what, I'm really, really strong and good at wrestling. How is that going to help me in a combat zone? Like, what?
I know. Like, PETA... Like, they are both shitty at acknowledging their strengths.
I mean, granted, if I had to choose, I would definitely choose the one who's, like, sitting in a tree sniping people off from a distance. Don't get me wrong. But, like...
Yeah. But, like, PETA's a contender.
He's a contender.
But you know who he's not a contender, according to? His mom.
His own goddamn mom.
His mom sucks.
I just wrote more mom stuff, colon, and then wrote my note about that. It's just like, his dad goes to see Katniss, and then his mom does this. Like, not a good day for PETA.
My poor PETA.
I did have some, like, sort of offshoot thoughts in this moment, just because it was like, they must be being, bugged, watched, whatever have you, in this moment, too, you know what I mean? So, like, there's no hiding any skills from the game makers at all if they don't want them to.
No.
But I do, it made me think about how in the movie you get that subplot between President Snow and Seneca Crane, who, I don't even know if Seneca Crane's like a character.
Yeah.
I think his name is mentioned in book two because he like was fired and like that's the whole thing.
Yeah. But that movie really establishes him and more importantly,
his facial
his beard.
Hair.
Yeah.
No, it's fantastic. A look so iconic, they drew it on a mannequin in the second movie, and everyone knew exactly what it was.
My new goal is for me to be Seneca Crane for Halloween.
Oh, that'd be a great and entirely doable costume.
Yeah.
And, like, delightfully dated, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like... a reference that everyone will get and be like, okay, it's like 6 years after the fact, but cool. But I really love the subplot there that not only is it useful, but it's entertaining. And I just love like every decision that Seneca Crane makes in the book or in the movie about the games with, you know, Katniss's score and the rule about two people being able to win and all of that.
Yeah.
And President Snow being like, do you not get what we're doing here? Like,
you're so right. That's like a good adaptation.
Like, that was a good move. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So next, PETA is like, he looks at Haymitch and he's like, ugh, Katniss has no idea the effect she can have. And Katniss has like an inner monologue spiral. It's amazing.
Just, yeah, no, a lovely insecurity spiral.
That's
just so relatable.
It's so relatable.
What could he have possibly meant by that? He's such a jerk.
Yeah, he's such a fucking asshole. What, do people pity me? Did they pity me? Am I secretly weak? I've been doing my best. I hate myself. Yeah, it's like, Katniss, I get it. You're doing good. You're okay.
Totally. And I was also doing a lot of comparison between movie Katniss and book Katniss again here. And it's almost like movie Katniss is what book Katniss thinks of herself. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Movie Katniss is, like, genuinely really surly all the time and, like, kind of not really likable as a, like, person to chill with, which is how Katniss thinks of herself, but in reality it's, like, just a normal sauce 16-year-old girl, you know, like...
Or that, like, she actually is really likable, that, like, all the people in the Hob really like her and they right. trade with her, and, like, she, like, got her cute little sister this goat, and, like, yeah. you know...
Totally, yeah. She's just so sure that he meant it as an insult.
I know.
Oh, it's so funny.
Oh, Katniss.
And then we have some straight up fan fiction writing where Haymitch mm-hmm. is like, no, you guys have to hang out the whole time because there was only one bed.
Because there was only one bed. Writing your own fan fiction is good writing. I've said it before. I'll say it again.
No, it's great. That's
yeah.
making two people be a couple by just forcing them into the same room all the time. Like, it's great. It's enjoyable. Yeah. It works.
So then they, like, ride the elevator down to the cool training gym, which is fun to imagine.
Yeah.
And then... they have a lesbian gym teacher named Atala.
Atala!
So they were talking about how, like, they can't, like, have any, like, the tributes can't have any practice combat with each other.
Mm.
But there are assistants on hand if they want to practice a partner. And I was just thinking about, like, those assistants have a real fucked up week.
I thought about that, too. I didn't write it down, but I also had that same thought of, like, yeah, you've got to, like, either really compartmentalize or, like, cry a lot. Because, like, you have met and hung out and, like, taught. Like, I just think about, like, mm-hmm. the bond that's formed when you teach someone a skill and you, like, put in the time and effort into teaching someone a skill. Never mind when it's the context of, like, oh, I'm teaching you this skill because it might help you survive.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's... fucked up for sure. And then there's the, like, nightmare of Kat, you know, Katniss is sort of, now that she's up seeing the other tributes up close, she's evaluating them and she's like, well, I'm shorter than everyone, but I'm, like, pretty much the best fed, which is a dark detail.
Yeah,
like, other than the yeah. careers, mm-hmm. she's the only one who, like, had meat regularly. Because she hunted yeah. it herself.
Which woof.
So then her and PETA go to try out some of the other stations. And, like, I do love that they, like, are like, how about we learn some new skills? And, like, Captain Tying Knots is so happy to see them.
Yes! That is not where the cool kids go for the Hunger Games training. Yeah.
He's like, yes, some customers. Let's tie some knots. And we really start to get some, like, they really start to pepper in some horrifying details here. Like, uh-huh. like, PETA's talking to her about something and Katniss is distracted because she's watching another boy throw a spear through a mannequin's heart at 15 yards away. You're like, uh-huh. oh, God, that would be so yeah. rough.
Yikes. I know.
Oh, no.
Yeah. The details are so good. And next we get a moment where Katniss definitely has not had a crush on PETA for 1,000 years because they're at the camouflage station
yes.
and PETA is, like, painting dappled light on his arm. And Katniss, very casually in her internal monologue, is like, what? He's, like, probably never been outside the meadow. Did he learn that from that scraggly old apple tree in his backyard? Katniss. How do you know what his backyard looks like?
Oh, well, that's because that's... She's sitting under the tree when he throws her the bread.
I know, but it was raining. She knows what it looks like in the sun.
She does, like, go through that whole thought process. You're right. The concept that, like... he decorates the cakes, so he's good at uh-huh. art and camouflage. Uh-huh. The thing with that concept is that, like, in real life, that does actually kind of make sense. But in a book reading it, it seems so ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, like, it does actually make sense. Like, those are skills with overlap, but, like...
But Peeta does not have any skills that don't relate back to bread, and it is hilarious. You know?
Yes.
He only has bread skills, and actually, like, he only has bread hotness?
He's just a tasty little bun.
What that baguette do?
And then the game makers show up rocking their purple robes.
So, like, a lot of times when I'm reading a book, I will have an imaginary image and not think too hard about it.
Sure.
And I'll have to go back and be like, where did I get that? And what does that look like?
Yeah.
And on this read around, I was like, where did I get that image of what the game makers look like? You've seen the pilot two-parter of Star Trek The Next Generation. I think you already know where I'm going. But you know when, like, Q is a judge and he puts mankind on trial for being shitty? And yes. The outfit he's wearing?
Yes.
That, but purple.
Yeah. With that, like, Wizagamot hat that he's wearing?
Yes.
Yeah. They just released a teaser trailer for season 2 of Picard. And I know you haven't watched season 1, and I know you don't want to. But you should watch the trailer, because it's it'll make you laugh. Because basically they're teasing the fact that, like, season 2 is all going to be about Q coming back.
Oh my god.
Yeah. And the way they tease that is by, like, there's a random deck of cards that the camera's, like, dramatically zooming on. And then, like, a thing gets flipped, and then it zooms on the Q. And it, like, you're like... Okay, sure, I guess that relates to Q in the sense that,
like,
that's
I
the
know
same
he's
letter.
Gay.
Right. Like, and then you just get the voiceover from that episode of Q being like, the trial never ends, or whatever, something like that. I don't know. So I'm going to watch that, and it's going to be medium.
It is going to be medium. But I do love Q trying to seduce Picard's storyline.
Yeah. And then they have, so then they have to eat lunch at the high school cafeteria where everyone sits and clicks.
No.
The forced friendly conversation between Peeta and Katniss is a truly difficult scene because there's just, like, so much going on there where, like, like, Katniss thinks she's trying more than she is, and Peeta isn't trying, but is pretending to only be trying. And either way, there's just a lot of trying.
It's rough. Katniss reports that she's not that bad at spear throwing, which, based on Katniss's level of self-talent reporting, means that she's a killing machine.
Right. Which isn't that... I'm pretty sure that passage is just, like, to set up how later she's gonna kill that guy with his own spear after he kills Rue. Right?
That's right. Good job, Suzanne. That's good writing.
What happens. I can't remember.
That's called when you finish the book and you're, like, doing your dishes, and you're like, wait, I should change this part of the training scene. Yeah. We get our first Rue appearance.
Yes.
Where she's kind of, like, quietly following them and is just already so cute and charming, even though she's not, like, speaking yet, really. She's just kind of, like, pattering around behind Katniss and Peeta and doing the same stations as them.
Yeah. And I'm sorry to, like, keep bringing up the movie, but, like, they just did a great job adapting it. Because, like, there's only, like, one tiny little shot to introduce Rue at this part. And it's a scene where, like, she stole one of the career's knives and is hiding with it. And, like, it's it's totally effective. It makes her charming. And, like, she's not super threatening, but she's wily, you know? Like, it's great. They really did a great job at adapting these books.
They did.
Anything else before we move on to the evaluation?
No. Let's get it.
So, yeah, they have their evaluation. I'm kind of surprised Peeta didn't do some stuff with camouflage during his, but I guess Haymitch told him to throw some stuff around, so he threw some stuff around.
Yeah, because Katniss is a professional. She notices that, like, the bow and the arrows are different than she's used to using.
Yeah.
So she has to, like, calibrate as these people are watching, which that's another good example of a detail that would not be interesting or relevant in a movie, totally. But is good and necessary in a book, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it sets up the scene well, too, because it reinforces, like, why they're not paying attention to her. Like, some of them kind of try to watch at first, but then lose interest when she's not super great. So it sets up the scene really well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know we've already talked about it, but, like, I just... She shoots an apple out of a suckling pig's mouth, which is, like, exactly the right time to pick the most obvious trope you could possibly pick.
Yes! Like,
that's the perfect time.
Yeah.
Great job.
Yes. No, it's so fucking good. And then she goes... Thank you for your consideration.
Queen.
And it's just so good!
and the slight bow afterward. And, like, it's great. It's just great.
Yeah. I love Katniss so much. All right. Are you ready?
Yeah.
To move on to chapter 8. All right. So, chapter 8. Katniss storms out after her stunt, convinced there are going to be terrible repercussions. After a good cry, Katniss goes to dinner and tells her team what went down. To her surprise, all of them are super into it. And she cheers up. That night, the tributes are evaluated on TV with a deadliness score from 1 to 12. I couldn't find it. I think it just says a score the whole time, but I wanted to contextualize.
It is called that now.
Deadliness score. Anyways, so PETA gets an 8, and Katniss gets an 11, the highest of any tribute. Comforted by her boost in sponsorship potential, Katniss goes to sleep. The next morning, she gets jarring news. PETA wants to be coached separately from now on.
So, yeah, Katniss is, like, genuinely terrified.
Yeah.
And you know how you know you're living in an authoritarian state regime? When your actions might cause your family to be murdered. Like, that's how you really know.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, like, a real concern for her in this moment, and I kind of forgot about that. I'm like, yeah, oof, that is scary. But then, you know, Haymitch makes her feel better with logic and humor, which are always the best combination of things to solve anxiety.
It's true. It's definitely... before we get to Haymitch's logic and humor, first, like, Katniss cries herself out, and then she goes down to dinner. They're eating a fish soup, and Katniss is like, the saltiness reminds me of my tears. I'm just like, you're being so dramatic.
She has, her little emo teen moment.
It's incredible.
There's a whole system in place for giving them scores for gambling purposes. It's for gambling.
Yes.
It's like, it's explicitly for gambling. I just really like that. And it's 1 through 12, because we're in a young adult novel, and you gotta throw the number 12 in there as many times as possible.
Yeah, which I was thinking about that, and I was like, that's why Water Clock is so amazing.
Yeah, no, not a complaint. I love 12. Like, that's great. Like, that's the best part of Battlestar Galactica, is that, like, there are 12... There are, like, 12 colonies, and, like, there are a bunch of Cylons, and they all look alike, and there's 12 different models. Like, it's great. It's wonderful. Yeah. No.
That's great.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's a great number. It divides by a lot of different things. It's fun.
Totally.
And it's so sweet that, like, she's, like, worried about disappointing the stylists because they did so well. And she's like, oh, I don't want to waste all their hard work making you look fucking awesome.
It's so true. And I love how, like, everybody's kind of like Katniss, like, what happened? And she finally tells them, and Haymitch goes, well, that's that. And you can tell he's, like, so proud of her.
Yeah.
Haymitch and Cinna started the revolution.
No, I feel like I was literally just gonna say, I think this is the moment when Cinna started sketching her, like, all black rebel outfit, like, in his head, like, right now in this moment. He's like, oh, a bow, you say? Like,
yeah, totally.
And I also love that even Effie's like, well, it was their job to pay attention to you. They should have fucking paid attention to you. Like,
they're all just radicalizing Effie. And she's tiny, like, accidentally coming along, you know?
Yeah.
It's great.
And there is so much logic. It's great writing because you do kind of fall into Katniss's panic while she's panicking. You're like, oh shit, that is kind of bad. And then everyone points out really obvious reasons of it's like, you know, like she's worried about her family, and Hammond's just like, you don't have to worry about your family. No one knows what you did in there. So, like, it's not a public statement thing. You don't have to worry about that. And, like, and then Portia's like, we don't even have to worry about getting a low score. Nobody pays attention to low scores. That could be her hiding something as a strategy.
Totally.
That's all like, oh, okay. That is
super
real and reasonable and comforting.
Yeah. So then the scores come around. Peter gets an 8, which is great. The careers get like 8s to 10s. As a teenager, when I read this book, I thought Katniss getting an 11 was kind of silly. I was like, oh, she's the main character. They have to do that. Mm. But now rereading it, I'm like, no. Katniss earned an 11. Like, you know, those judges were all like drunk as hell, and she shot that apple out of the pig's mouth, and the air was like still quivering when she stormed out of the room, and they all just like silently looked at each other and then were like, this is gonna be the best season of TV we've ever produced.
Totally. Yeah, like, you know, that shot was fucking amazing. You know, they were all, you know, she had to, like, weave that arrow in between guys who were standing around the pig. Like,
yeah.
And all the stuff she did when they weren't paying attention, like,
it was amazing.
Like, cutting a rope with an arrow and all of that shit. Like, you know, afterwards they looked around and were like, wait, did she do that? Like, you know, like, they were like, oh, okay, damn. Yeah, no, in hindsight, the score is, you're kind of like, if PETA got an 8, either these careers are not as scary as they seem, or PETA did some crazy fucking throwing. How did he get a career score? Like, that's crazy.
PETA getting an 8 is less believable than Rue getting a 7.
Yeah, honestly. Like, Rue's deadliness. You know the scene in the second Mummy movie where they're going through the jungle and the little pygmy zombie mummies take out all the like army of bad guys, but the scene is just like they're in tall grass. You just see like rustling of leaves and then people falling into the grass. It's just like a bunch of pygmies slashing Achilles tendons, you know, like. I just feel like that's Rue, you know? Like, Rue just quickly comes by you and just completely cuts your entire fucking leg to shreds while she does it. Like,
Rue is a formidable opponent.
Like, just slingshots you in the eye, cuts your throat while you're down.
Yep.
Yeah, they were being real generous with PETA. And does he kill anyone in the first games?
Listen, he makes himself look like a riverbank a lot. And he eats some soup.
He, like, accidentally kills Foxface by stupidly, but luckily not eating those frickin' berries. Like,
oh, man.
I also, this is tangential, but I love that canonically there are two victors who happen to be from the same district, I think, or at least they are in the movie, who survived and won their game simply by hiding as in riverbeds.
Like, totally. The morphlings, it's a whole flavor of Victor.
So, and then Katniss goes to bed because she's tired, because she had all, she experienced the full range of human emotions in one single day.
She did, which that'll tire you out.
That will. That'll do it. And then we get some backstory on how her and Gale first met in the woods, which, like, God, the more I read this book, the more I'm like, yeah, Katniss never really had, super romantic feelings for Gale.
Yeah.
I really do believe the, like, her and PETA over her and Gale thing, just because, like, clearly they have a really close relationship, but it is very much based on their history and where they come from.
Mm-hmm.
He's just her best friend, and she deserves that. Like, she just deserves a best friend, for God's sakes.
I was actually thinking about that, because there's a really good line where she says, like, I call him my friend, but in the last year, it seemed too casual a word for what Gale is to me.
Right. And I think she doesn't elaborate because, like, you know, you want to tease whatever you can because it's a young adult novel.
Yeah.
I also paused on that line, too, and it really is just, like, that's her found family.
Exactly.
And you see so much evidence of that, especially, like, I feel like in book two, where, like, you get a lot more, like, you see her interact with his mom. There's a bit more detail about how, like, because I think in the book, in the second book, like, he's working in the mines now, so he can't go hunt in the woods. So, like, she's hunting in the woods for his family, because she doesn't need the money.
Because they're her family.
Yeah. Because they're her family, right, exactly. His family is her family. They are family.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, and it's a, you know, the whole triangle thing, that's a selling marketing thing. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if the editors leaned on her a little bit.
Yeah, totally. So one of my good friends and I worked at, like, a nursing home last year that was an ethical and medical and legal and emotional nightmare.
Yeah.
But he and I were texting about it a couple weeks ago, of being like, that in hindsight, that was actually exactly as bad as I felt like it was at the time. And he texted me, we are simultaneously blood brothers and soul sisters. And I was like, that's what Katniss and Gale are.
It's true. They are. Well, and that's the thing. It's like they're too similar. Like, Gale is just, like, male Katniss in so many ways that, like... But it's also very realistic. I like the whole, like, she's aware that, like, you know, she herself says, I can't help but compare the dynamic she had with Gale to what she's feeling like she's faking now with PETA.
Yeah.
But she knows it's like it's an unfair comparison given the extreme circumstances.
I know, that made me so sad, where she imagines talking with Gale and him seeing her 11 and him being like, ah, well, there's some room for improvement. And, like, how she can so clearly imagine the way that he would, like, joke with her and make her feel better.
Yeah.
And also motivate her. And, like, that is so sweet and intimate. And the yearning is real. The friend yearning is real.
Right? Yeah, the friend yearning is real. And that, like, guilty moment where she's like, she almost wishes it was him instead of PETA, but of course she doesn't really wish that. But, like, God, just the comfort that it would bring if they were here together, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And also just, like, we make a lot of jokes about how ridiculous it is, but it must be really hard for Katniss always questioning PETA's motives and not knowing if she can really trust PETA. And because we read it as readers and it's obvious, but for her, she really doesn't. She's observed this boy really closely, but she doesn't know him. And they don't know each other. And so that mistrust, especially given the circumstances, is very real and very legitimate. And God, like, just the comparison there is impossible to avoid if you were in that situation.
I mean, like, her conditioning to be suspicious of people and not understand their motives is legitimate.
Yeah.
And, like, Gale is the one person where she's sure she hasn't been, like, surveilled with.
That's true.
So anyway, she has this sad reminiscence, and she goes to bed, and then Effie wakes her up again. You know, Katniss is so mad. She's like, we're gonna have a big, big, big day!
Oh my God.
Can you imagine?
I can imagine, because, okay, so, if you listen to this, Grandma, I'm sorry, but, so every once in a while, my parents would, I would stay with my dad's parents, and, which was mostly great. They had, like, a really nice place, and, they always spoiled me rotten. But they are early risers, and I come from a family of not early risers. And they were, like, a little judgmental about it. And there definitely were times when Grandma would come in and, like, open the curtains in the morning and just be like, so incredibly angry.
Oh my God. Grandma, no.
Or I'd, like, come down for breakfast and they'd be, like, done eating and already in their, like, their sweaters, you know? And I'm just like, I just, come on. It's the weekend. I don't have school today. I want to sleep until noon.
Oh, my God.
I have undiagnosed ADHD. Leave me alone.
Yeah. You're like, my chemicals are not balanced and you're not even giving me time to fake it.
I haven't discovered coffee yet. Like, come on. Oh, man.
Yeah.
But they had a pool at their condo, so, like, pff, all is forgiven.
The promised land, truly. Oh, my God. So Katniss wakes up, she takes a shower, and then we meet one of my favorite characters in this book, the lamb stew with plums over wild rice. It just sounds so good.
I really did not know where you're going with that.
Yeah. No, it just...
I don't think I've ever delicious. Had lamb. I'm also not sure I've ever had plums.
Let's fuck it up. So at some point when we're both vaccinated enough, let's make a fake version of this.
That would be fun, of, like, making some random Hunger Games capital dishes.
Let's do it.
That would be fun. All right. So then, yeah, and then PETA wants to be coached, and that's the end of the chapter.
You got any other book stuff?
No book stuff. I've been really looking forward to talking about what media, though, I've been consuming.
Me too. Oh my God. What media have you been consuming?
Well, so it's a two-parter. The first half of this week, I joined you in your sultry romance novel land. I read all of Red, White, and Royal Blue in one night, to the point where I was up till, like, 2:30 in the morning the night before
I
had to work.
It's so good.
It was delightful. I knew it was going to be good. On that first page, they made a joke about bleaching his asshole, which, in hindsight, is hilarious, because that character goes on to think he's straight for almost the entire book.
I know, but I do love the last third of the book, where he keeps being like, why did I think I was straight?
No, that part is
gross.
Because it's like, yeah, dude, you're a short, hot Latino guy who bleaches his asshole. That's... not
and can't stop noticing how hot other guys are.
Like, that's not straight.
It's not straight.
You're bi, dude.
It's not straight behavior.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. He is extremely bi. Do you know who else joined us in reading Red, White, and Royal Blue?
Who? Is it Beth?
My therapist!
I just redlined the mic!
No, but for real, we were, like, doing that kind of thing at the beginning of the therapy session, where it's like, oh, you know, how's your week been, and what have you been up to? And I was like, oh, well, I read this really fun book, and it was super good, and it was about these, like, sexy gay dudes, and this and that. And at the end of the session, you know, she, like, gave me my homework, and was like, you know, if anything comes up, call me, and actually, you know, one second. She, like, cut out her little, like, notepad for clinical notes and was like, what was the name of that book again?
Amazing.
So, you're welcome, my psychologist.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, so I read that and was like, well, I found my new hyperfixation of the week. And so I did some intense Googling because I was feeling really picky and was like, I want some gay romance. I want it to be two dudes and I want it to be written by a dude. Please, thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, at least Red, White, and Royal Blue, which also, can you imagine Scooby-Doo trying to say that book title?
Mm-hmm. I'm good. I just have undiagnosed asthma.
So I was desperately trying to find, and I found someone, like, curated a list of, like, amazing gay romance novels, like, and each thing was like, ooh, this is, like, these, it's like, main characters. A guy who's this kind of hot and has this
it
profession.
It has the sexiness flavors.
It has the sexiness flavors and, like, the, like, a little bit about the author and, like, some info about representation. Like, oh, this one has a black main character.
Good.
This one has a trans main character. This one, and all that stuff. So it's an amazing list.
Yeah,
and
the book, you can enjoy your romp.
I have to tell you about the book that I picked and read first. It's called Hothead.
Uh-huh.
It is about two New York City firefighters who are best friends.
Oh, my God.
And, like, each other's fond family. And one of them is really down on his luck money-wise, and so to make money, they have to do gay porn together.
Oh my God.
That's the whole concept. And then they, like, fall in love and have crazy hot sex, and then there's, like, a whole other third of the book that happens after that. Of them, like, being a cute couple out of nowhere with one of their entire giant Italian family. It's amazing.
That sounds so good.
It was
I
so
felt
good.
Like I was just making the noises of if I cared about sports and was watching a good sports, you know?
Totally. No, it's so good. And, like, the cover is just, like, two shiny torsos wearing the firefighters, like, suspender things. So I was really going into it with, like, this is going to be so trash. I'm going to love it. But it was actually, like, really thoughtfully written. Honestly, kind of triggering at times because there's, like, a lot of internalized homophobia, external homophobia, and, like, a weird gay bashing scene.
Whoa.
So, like, trigger warning for if that's a thing for you. But a surprisingly good book.
That's amazing.
What about you?
I also have just, like, a whole saga to take you on.
Good. Yes.
So, last week I was rereading Magpie Murders, which is this, like, super classy meta British whodunit type murder mystery.
Cool.
But it's by this guy called Anthony Horowitz.
Great name.
Totally. And I had it on my Instagram story of, like, me classily holding the book being like, oh my God, look, I read. Anyways, but our mastering producer, Tony, hit me up and was like, oh, I love the Alex Rider books. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he was like, you know, this guy's, like, YA James Bond books. And I was like, okay.
Tell me more. Yeah.
And so I read the first Alex Rider book, and now I'm halfway into the second Alex Rider book. Spoiler alert. Because they're so fucking good. Anthony Horowitz has the same level of, like, a literary boner for Ian Fleming, who's the guy who wrote the James Bond books, as I do.
Yes. I did see your tweet about that. Yes.
I am not ashamed to say that I have a British middle-aged man level literary boner for Ian Fleming.
That's fair. It's a whole, I was gonna say aesthetic, but that doesn't fully capture what I mean, but, like, it does. Yeah, no, it is a whole thing.
It's a whole thing, because those books are great. I will say, we're in 2021. If you're curious about the James Bond novels, don't read any of the ones where the villain is not white. Like, these were written by an English guy who was born in, like, 1920-something. Like, woof. I was thinking about it then, because I'm doing, like, a weird age flipperoony where, like, I'm really enjoying the Alex Rider books, and I'm 28, and I discovered my first James Bond book at the age of 10. But I didn't discover it. My dad gave it to me when we were, like, on vacation on Christmas break. And he gave it to me. He gave me Moonraker, which is the one with, like, the least fucking. It's the most child appropriate James Bond book. But he definitely gave it to me with this vibe of, like, I loved these, and, like, your grandpa, my dad loved these, and just, like, check it out. Like, you'll thank me later. Which is like, David, did you have an inkling? David, did you know? But I also think about what I looked like at 10, and I was in a big, like, cargo shorts and baggy unisex t-shirts and only listening to Wicked over and over in my CD Walkman phase. Nice. So, like, you know, it wouldn't have been super hard to have an inkling. But I have a lot of, like, funny middle school memories of, like, because I got more of those James Bond books. Actually, Paul, you should Google, like, mid-2000s James Bond paperback, or, like, mid-2000s Goldfinger paperback.
Oh, like the reprints of them in the 2000s?
Yeah, just, it has extremely naked women on the cover.
Oh, wow.
But, like, I definitely remember having these at school and, like, hiding them in my backpack and being like, no one can see I'm reading this for no particular reason that I can articulate, and it's definitely not a big deal, but no one must know. Wow, wow, wow. You got anything else?
No.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for listening to Gay Wizard Book Club. Next week, we'll be talking about chapters 9 through 11 of The Hunger Games. You can reach us by email at gaywizardbookclub@gmail.com or on Instagram and Twitter at gaywizbookclub. I'm on Instagram and Twitter at ray_McLean.
And I'm at Paul W. Turing, which I keep plugging even though I have not posted a single thing.
Love it. If you'd like to help us out, rate, review, and download us on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Goodbye.